You know, you're supposed to start these things off with some self-deprecating humor. And so I had some great jokes, but they were all predicated on how bad Charlotte football's team is. And so the game kind of ruined that for me last night. So I'm sorry about that. Not sorry, but sorry. So anyway, man, it is really a joy to be here. It's a joy to be around Steve. We joke because we're good friends in graduate school, and you know, kind of apartment complex kind of drives everything together, and then you know you're off, and life happens, and kids happen, and family happens, and ministry happens, and you know you just appreciate each other, and then you catch up on social media once it arrives, and then I'm like, we got to figure out how to spend some time together. And the only time we can figure that out is being halfway across the world together. So a couple years ago in Ethiopia was the most significant time that we got to spend together. And it's been great to kind of catch up a little bit all the way to here. So now when Charlotte joins Conference USA, and they're playing Marshall every year. So I'm like, Steve, we got to figure this out. And so I'm going to come up here on home games, and we'll get Steve down on our home games if you'll give him a Sunday off, extra Sunday off. It's good, I promise you. And we'll figure that out as we keep going. And it's good to know Dave too. I got to know Dave in Ethiopia when he came. Was this?
You have to tell them how you got to know Dave.
That's like right on the edge, and I'm a new speaker here. Well, I know Dave personally. This is going to go either really good or really bad. Right on the edge right here. Dave came with Steve this past February. Is that right? Yeah. So this was the second church conference that we were at. And in Ethiopia, church conferences, and they're coming all over. And we're teaching to 30,000 people. And they're sitting for days, you know, just on the lawn everywhere. And anyway, the place that we go and do a lot of mission work, or where some of our family is from, it's a pretty isolated place. And you got to get on a boat and take about a, 2.5, 3-hour, 4-hour boat ride, depending on, you know, if you got an 8-horsepower engine or, if you got the big one, you got a 15-horsepower engine. So you're really moving out there. And anyway, it's a long ride on this steel bottom boat, and those of us that have been on this ride several times, we kind of know that you probably need to go to the bathroom before you get on that boat. That's all I'm saying. And I'm going to end the story at this point, and you guys can just ask Steve and Dave the rest, because I got to move on. But let me just tell you, it's a good introduction to somebody, you know. And you got to go to the bathroom. I mean, you got to go to the bathroom. I mean, you really got to go to the bathroom. You got to go again? Whew. All right. So I know Dave. It's the greatest. It's the greatest. I'm telling you, Dave, just take this laughter and multiply it about 2 million, and we've had that much laughter at your expense in Charlotte, and you didn't even know it. You've been a blessing to us, total blessing. You want me to get to the Bible? Okay, all right, I can do that. Here we go. Hey, thanks for having me here. This has been really cool. Here, first service down to Huntington, at that campus, it's amazing things going on. Like you got really something special here. And then to come here, Steve was like, I don't know, you know, it's Marshall games, night game. I don't know if many people be here. He's kind of downing you guys, downplaying. Like, boom, here you go. So great. I want to talk. I know this is your missions conference, and a lot of our mission stuff is centered in Ethiopia. And most of those stories, I'll be honest with you, we're going to talk about tonight. So please come back. And I know Bill Harding was here last year. I will not ever be as good as Bill Harding. I'll just tell you that right now, okay? You got the best of the best last year. And so I'm coming in on the coattails. And so if half of you that came out, that's my goal. If half of you that came out last year, if I hit Bill's halfway mark, then I'll count it as success. But you get to tell some stories. You get to hear from my wife. And she didn't know that yet, but she's going to tell a couple stories. So listen. One of the things that God has done in my life and in our family's life through our mission engagement has actually been transforming our family and our concept, and ultimately transforming our concept of who God is and how we relate to Him. And so I want to kind of share that with you because we have adopted in our family. We were a family of four, and we've adopted. And you know, when you think about adoption, you kind of think about the word. When I was growing up, I grew up in a church kind of like this, and adoption, it was just like that's just such a nice term. It's just such a flowery, fluffy, great idea. I mean, anybody that adopts, oh, that's so great, you know, and we just kind of had that concept growing up, and I think that we went into this thing the same way. We kind of thought the same way about it, and then you're in it, and then you realize, look, this is not a nice little thing that people do. In fact, when people ask me, David, what's adoption like? And I get that question a lot. And this is my standard response. Well, adoption is war. And the war, what do you mean? Well, this is what I mean. Listen, when the big, huge cosmic battle between good and evil play out on our planet Earth, in our human relationships, children are in the crosshairs. Okay, this is always how it's been throughout the scriptures. Okay, you go all the way back to Exodus, and God's plan is to bring His children out of Egypt. All right, and what happens when God starts to initiate that plan? Every male Jewish child ends up dying because of that plan. And then you go through the Old Testament, and you have this God, Moloch, and He's a fertility God, supposedly. And when you're a fertility God, what you're supposedly require of your people is to give back what you've given to them, and what you've given to them is children. And so in their skewed thinking about worship, these people who are worshiping this God of Moloch, who is a bronze statue with his hands like this, they heat up this statue, they build a fire, they heat up the statue, and they literally place their live babies in his arms, and they listen to them burn to death. They tell us that they would play worship music, okay, with drums beating loud to drown out the screams, and that became part of the worship of this God Moloch. Children are always in the crosshairs. Fast forward to when God wants to send his son to earth, ultimately to the cross. But before that, what happens? In and around Bethlehem, every male child 2 years old and under is what? It's exterminated. Trying to take out the Messiah. See, every time this battle rages, children get put in the crosshairs. And you fast forward to today, all across our world, all across our country, right here in this community, our children are in the crosshairs. And children are being sacrificed for the sake of convenience, for the sake of peace. They're being sacrificed. And in the midst of this, you got this statement about God. You know, we think about God in a lot of different ways. And if you kind of say, hey, what's the clearest picture of how God presents himself in the Bible? If you'd asked me that years ago, I'd have never come up with this verse. But right here in Psalm 68, it says this. I got to learn to use this thing. Father to the fatherless, defender of widows, this is God, whose dwelling is holy. Like, where is it in scriptures that you have this clarity about who God is? You know, I studied the scriptures and went to graduate school, and I've got two master's degrees and all that. And, you know, you start theology books, or you start a systematic theology book, and they start about who God is, and they talk about his sovereignty, and they talk about all these different aspects of, and rarely do they get to this verse. The practical, like, this is who God is. And God's saying, listen, this is who I am. I am father to the fatherless, defender of widows. And then this is what I do. God places the lonely in families. That's what he does. You see, we serve a God who is on a mission. And his mission is to look out the landscape of our world to all people who are lonely and place them in families. Now, in this passage, it particularly highlights the fatherless and the widow and the prisoner. But guys, like in this room, there are plenty of people who are lonely. They might be surrounded by people, but their hearts are lonely. They have no one to share what's going on in here with. In your neighborhoods, on your campuses, in your workplaces, there's lonely people everywhere. And God's mission is to bring them into family. Your family. This family. That's God's mission. That's who he is. That's what he does. For us, we were a family of six. And then we decided, kind of selfishly, we had three girls and a boy. We thought, you know, we'll kind of balance this thing, balance of power in our family, male, female. Let's adopt a boy. And so we went to figure out with a few of our contacts in Ethiopia where we'd done some work. Say, you know, hey, we want to adopt a boy. And like, well, through certain conversations, there's this little boy. And this is the first picture that we have of him. And then the blue little hoodie. And his name's Garamo, and we call him Garrett. And this is, like, when you know, if you know him, you'd look at this picture. Every time I look at this picture, there's just a deep sadness because of who I know him, who he is. And this picture just isn't even representative. Like, this is just this hollow shell of a person. These three kids and one other kid from this little island that we go and serve at, they came on the boat to the mainland, and this is their first picture of being in the little orphanage there in that town. And so we decided to adopt a little boy, and we got word back, hey, there's a boy, and he's, at the time, he was 4 years old, and but he has a twin sister. And I thought, well, there goes the balance of power. And we just said, okay, well, we'll adopt him. So in the middle there is Tizita, Tia, and Garamo and Tizita, twins. So we decided, you know, our hearts are set. Let's go adopt these kids. And we thought, you know, this is God's plan. Like, he'll make it happen, right? And we got about a year into the process, a little more than a year in the process, and we got word back, I'm sorry. You know, I know you've had contact with these kids. I know you think they're your kids, but you know what? These kids are unadoptable. We cannot locate their family. We can't process and figure this out on the legal side. And you just need to find some other kids to adopt. And so then there's this choice that you make in this process when you realize, look, for everybody else in the world, these kids are just one of many. You know, so the adoption agent says, there's other kids. I was like, well, yeah, that's fine for you to say, but for us, these are our kids. And you realize, maybe for the first time, like, we are the only ones in the world that are treating these kids as our kids. That these kids already have a mom and dad. It's just not official yet. So for us, what that meant is we're going to get on a plane, and we're going to go to Ethiopia, and we're going to figure it out. And I don't know what business we have getting on a plane 3 weeks after we get this word. And we're going to go find, in a country of millions and millions of people, we're going to go find their parents. That was our mission. And we had zero starting points. We landed on the ground in Ethiopia. Within 30 minutes, we met a guy through another relationship who we didn't even plan on meeting. And he said, I hear you're planning on trying to adopt some kids. And I said, yeah, we are. He said, well, let's go see them right now. Let's go to the orphanage. At this time, they're in an orphanage in the capital city, 5 million people in the capital city. And so we go to this orphanage, and this guy starts talking to the, well, where'd they come from? And started talking to Guillermo. And it's like, and figured out he came by boat. Well, Ethiopia is a landlocked country. There's only a few lakes there that have, you know, islands. And so he started narrowing it down. Listen, within 4 hours of being on the ground in Ethiopia, we're talking to a guy on the island where these kids are from. And we made gigantic steps forward. It still took us another 10 months before these kids joined our family. And so this was the day that we got home. And so my oldest at the time, this is 6 years ago, Megan, she's in the middle. Kaylee, my second oldest, over on the right. Jacob, my son, and Lindsay, our youngest biological, and then Tia and Garrett. And those smiles, you know, when you look at them now, it's just a different ballgame. Because God places the lonely in families. And, you know, I'm a fairly normal guy from a fairly, you know, just great, solid Christian family. And I've learned a lot about God through some great teaching. And, you know, you expand that in graduate school, and you get to know these concepts, and it's important to study these concepts. I know several of you here planning on studying theology and going on into ministry or whatever. You know, and you just get this idea, and it's such good content. But let me tell you, in the midst of all that content, there's been a couple of things on this journey that have taught me so much more about God because I've stepped in. And here's kind of how I'll put it. Look, God's sovereign, and I'm not. So I don't even know what it's like to be sovereign. I just guess I'd be great. He's all-knowing, and I'm not. And so, see, there's all these things about God that I could never, ever even come close to being. But when God says I'm father to the fatherless, I think I could try that. When God says I'm defender of widows, I might be able to try that. And see, there's places where God describes himself, and it's almost like, hey, this is an invitation. You want to know what God's like? You want to know what it's like to feel what God feels? Just step into the journey. And he's got new doors of opening and experience of who he is. And then you get to a verse in Ephesians chapter 1 where it just says this, like, that God decided, back up, there you go. God decided in advance to adopt us into his family by bringing us to himself through Jesus Christ. See, it transforms even how I communicate the gospel right now. Because you know what? We talk all the time that Jesus died, and he died for you personally, like your sins, and his blood through your faith can be applied to your sins, and you can experience forgiveness. And you can be a child of God. And we kind of communicate that as an individual sense. And it's true on an individual level. But then when you expand it out to this, Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 1, like God decided way in advance to adopt us, not as an individual, but into this family. And he's saving you from yourself and from your sin, but he's saving you into family. This is what he wanted to do, and it gave him great pleasure. You see, God pursues us long before we even knew we needed salvation. He pursues us. And I know what it's like to pursue kids who don't even know they need to be adopted, really. It's just their reality. And, you know, there's people all around you that if you'll just take on the pursuit, if you just open your eyes, you'll see the lonely everywhere. I mean, if you just say a quick prayer this morning, God, point out somebody today, this week, that's lonely, that you would like for them to experience a greater sense of family. I promise you he'll do it. But you have to pursue long before they even know they need it. Some people need to be pursued before they even know they're lonely. You got to understand that that's what our God is. He's on a mission to bring the lonely into families, and inviting you and me to join him in that mission. And then he adopts us. He seals us in a way. This verse says there's this care, because later in Ephesians chapter 1, it says this, that God is going to bring you into his family, and then he's going to give you his spirit indwelling you. And this is what the spirit is in Ephesians chapter 1. It is God's guarantee that he'll give us the inheritance he promised, and that he's purchased us to be his own people. You see, it's not just an entrance into a family. It's entrance to all the blessings that come with being part of a family. And I mean, in our family, my parents, God has blessed them. My dad is just a really sharp business guy. My mom's in marketing, or she was before she retired. And God just blessed them. And they made a deal with all their grandkids. They have 18, 19 grandkids. Still counting. So they have 19 grandkids, and they made a deal that if their grandkids, when they're 15 years old, if they'll memorize the Sermon on the Mount, and they'll memorize the book of James. So if they'll memorize 8 chapters of the Bible, my parents will give them $9,000 or $10,000 to buy a car. It's got to be a 4-door car, and there's some parameters with that come along with. But it's a pretty good deal. Anybody take that deal? All you guys, all you guys. You take that deal. And so we adopt, so we have 4 kids. And again, when we adopt T and Garrett, they're 6 years old by the time the adoption's complete. But a couple years later, Megan and Kaylee, they're starting to memorize so that they can get a car. And Tia and Garrett are like, what's this about? I remember Garrett asking me and saying, well, you know, Mimi and Papa, like when you get to 15, like if you'll memorize this, that they'll buy you a car. I mean, listen, in Ethiopia, one of the top professions is being a taxi driver, because it's the most guaranteed income. And so, like, I mean, his eyes lit up, and I remember him asking him, like, do I get that deal? And I thought, like, well, yeah, buddy, like you're part of our family. It's like it comes with the territory. Like, see, God is not just on a mission to bring the lonely into his family. He wants to lavish on his sons and daughters the full blessing, the full inheritance of being a part of God's family. We got so much in store for those that are part of the family. And he wants you and I to be on that mission. So God pursues us. He adopts us. He cares for us. He provides for us in an inheritance way. On the top of that, he disciplines us, he teaches us, and then he sends us. He sends us as representatives of his family. And he says, I'm going to give you this ministry of reconciliation, the ministry of reconciling the world to God. Like, it's not evangelism. It's family expansion. That's what it is. You're saying, hey, come be a part of God's family with me. And he gives you that mission, that ministry. And so in our family, so you got T and Garrett, and I'm telling you, these kids. So we're a Henderson party of 8 at this point. And Garrett is 6 years old. And I promise you, every night at dinner, he's saying, wow, look at all this food we throw away. Some kids could eat that food. Wow, like, we got all this space in our house, Mom and Dad. This is coming out of a 6-year-old mouth. And I'm not talking about once or twice. It is relentless, relentless. And then the message came, Dad, can you check on Lemmy? To see if Lemmy has family. Dad, does Lemmy have family? That was the phrase. Does Lemmy have family? And you know what? We're so exhausted. We're exhausted financially. We're exhausted emotionally. We're exhausted resource. We're just like, we're a party of 8 now. And it's not always a party, if you know what I'm saying. And we got 2 girls at the time, and they're 15 and 14. And the chaos that comes with that. I'm sorry, you girls that are 14 and 15. You just got to know your chaos, okay? I'm just sharing, because I won't be here next week, and you won't have to see me. But I got 2 girls. You know, life's busy. And here's this little six-year-old. Does Lemmy have family? Does Lemmy have family? And you're just like, oh yeah, we'll check, buddy. We'll check, buddy. All right. Let's go watch some football. Does Lemmy have family? Night after night after night. I'm talking about 12, 14, 16 months of this. Finally, one night, I just remember we're sitting at the dinner table. Garrett starts up. Hey, Dad, have you checked? Does Lemmy have family? Finally, I said, All right, buddy, enough. I will check. I will seriously check to see if Lemmy has family. Right when I said that, my two girls, they pushed off from the table. They jumped up. I'm like, what in that? Like, Lemmy doesn't have family, Dad. Lemmy doesn't have family. I was like, how do you know? Well, a couple months ago, we emailed the adoption agency pretending to be you. '14 and '15. And here's the email that we got back from them that said, no, Lemmy's still in the orphanage. And I mean, like the train has left the station at that point, and I have no decision-making in the process. Listen, this is what family is. This is how God sees his family, okay? Like, we should be relentless about wanting. Does so-and-so have family? Do they have family? I'm telling you, God, I mean, we prayed to God, like, God, like, please, I can go to a party of nine, okay? But I cannot endure 2.5 years of just every day trying to figure this thing out. Lord, please, like, we'll step in here. And God was gracious to us from the time we committed to the time Lemmy came home. 4 years ago today, we were in Ethiopia bringing him home. And it was about 5 months. And so we went from Henderson Party 8 to Henderson Party 9. And this is Lemmy on the right. And I'm telling you, the love that one boy has for another boy, it's taught me so much. And I thought, am I that passionate about bringing other people into God's family? It'd be so easy for Garrett to just enjoy being family and having everything that we have. But the relentless spirit that says, does Lemmy have family, Dad? It haunts me. Because there's other kids out there and there's other lonely people out there that don't have somebody in this family advocating for them. Saying to each other in here, hey, does so-and-so have family? Hey, does so-and-so have family? It's revolutionized how I see God's family and our responsibility as he sends us out to expand his family. Well, this is currently, this picture is a year ago. And that's when you see the hollowness and the loneliness that's in that first picture. Because there's Lemmy on the left. And this is when they're heading into sixth grade. They're all in seventh grade now. So I got 4 seventh graders. So just, just pray for me. But listen, you don't have to go halfway around the world, okay? You don't have to go, yeah, Jesus, right. Like, just pray for me. But you don't have to go halfway around the world. And let me tell you, when you start to redefine family, and when you understand spiritual family, and you understand how your physical family and God's spiritual family can partner together in his mission, then your kids get it. My oldest is an intern at our church in youth ministry. She's the best youth minister intern that I've ever had. I mean, I'm biased, but it is. And so she asked this one time, hey, can Corey spend the night? And I'm like, sure. Like, we have people spend the night all the time. And so who's Corey? Well, Corey's, at the time, she was, I guess, finishing up middle school. And so then Corey starts not just spending a night, but just like a few nights a week. Couple weeks. and then she'll be back. And, you know, Corey's mom has been in prison. Dad's facing some real tough struggles with some addiction. And so he goes in and out of stability. And when you find a girl that's 14 years old and practically homeless and nobody advocating for her, and you've raised kids that know what family is and know what it means to invite people into that family, then you just start gaining family members, kind of. And so that happened for about a year. She would spend the night in different seasons of, and this past spring, so this is Henderson party of 10 now. And so this is the only picture, literally this is the only picture that we have where we're all together. And this happened this past summer. And so my wife and I there in the middle, and then third from the left is Corey. And she's amazing. She's 15 now. She's a sophomore. My son there in the middle is the same age as her. And honestly, like, I've got Megan and Kaylee, my two oldest girls, and they really are like a second and third mom, because they just get it. And literally, there's Corey as well as several others in our youth group call Megan Momgan, because that's just her heart as a 20-year-old saying, I'm gonna expand family. And you know, a couple of days ago, or it's actually a couple of weeks ago, Corey's been living with us for several months now, but it's bothered me because, you know, you're like, incorporating somebody into the family is not easy. It changes all the family dynamics, and you got to, you know, integrate somebody. And so I'm looking at Corey, and there's a couple of things that just really frustrating me about it. And I charge into most of those things pretty regularly. And so I was like, Corey, we need to talk. And she's kind of like, a 15-year-old girl, talk, all right? I'm like, this is what's bothering me, Corey. Like, every time we ask you questions, and I ask a lot of questions, but listen, I don't hold a candle to my wife. My wife invents questions. Just question after question. And I mean, like, our kids, they can't escape them. But, like, you know, Corey is like, you know, you ask her, like, so tell me how that was. Well, it's fine. Good. Yes. No. Part of it's just being 15-year-old, right? I mean, just if you want to ask me a question, do it, you know, on social media. And then I'll give you more than a one-word response. But if you ask me personally, I'm going to say one, and it just bothered me. Like, that's not what we do here in family. So on top of that, Corey, when you come, like, the only time that I get your engagement, like you're really with me, is when you need more minutes on your cell phone. And you know, or you need somebody to pay for your tournament entrance, or you need money to go to Taco Bell. That's the only time you come and initiate conversation with me. And so we kind of had a pep talk, and it wasn't comfortable, but I said, hey, this has got to change because it's not what family is. So, like, you know, I want to see some progress. I want to see, when I ask you a question, just kind of think maybe a sentence. Let's start there. When mom asks you a question, like, you know, engage. So I was praying as I was walking out of her room, closed the door, and I thought, oh, God, I hope that worked. I literally praying, and I just remember God saying to me, David, like, you shouldn't be so frustrated. Like, you treat me that way. You, right now, you're kind of in this season, David, where you need a lot from me, and that's pretty much the only times I hear from you. And I'm just like, you know, like, your whole heart's just laid bare. Like, you can't escape the Lord. You know, it's like, there's nothing to do but repent. And it's just like, so the next time I ask you a question, David, like, can you give me more than a one-word response? Can you come to me even when you don't need something from me? I'm telling you, like, God has changed us with this family. God's on a mission to seek out the lonely and to bring family to them, okay? And let me tell you, he wants to involve all of you in this mission. And I'm talking about from youngest to oldest. You know, my two girls, 19 and 20 now, one of them's a sophomore and one of them's a junior in college. They're both guardian ad litems in the legal system, advocating for kids. You're not too young to do something. You know, a six-year-old saying, does Lemmy have family? Does Lemmy have family? All the way to, like, my parents are the greatest. I mean, they called me a couple weeks ago. They're like, so, Corey, she get the deal? Like, she in? Like, what is this? And I'm like, well, it's not official yet, really legal, but kind of is. Okay, all right, I got it. You know, it's like, but then our church, like, what can you, like, you don't have to adopt kids. I mean, like, just look around at the lonely. Like, there's lonely in this room that are waiting to be pursued by somebody else here that's more integrated into family. There's college students that are really lonely, okay? And you can engage, whether you're a college student yourself or met somebody at the last site that, you know, what's her name at the end? Leslie. You know, she's like the mom down there for college students. I was like, man, Nancy. I'm like, and I just met her once, and you could tell, like, she's just caring and like, you can do something. But let me address something, all right? God gave us entrance into his family through death. Like, for God to invite us into his family cost his son his life. The entrance to family doesn't come free. It doesn't come cheap. It doesn't come. Life comes through death. That's the story of the Bible. Is life comes through death. And the reason that some of you won't take God up on his offer to join him in his mission to bring lonely into family is because you're too afraid to die to your own family. And I know that's really hard. It might be the hardest. But seriously, like, in a joking way, but in a serious way, I've given up on guessing what color my grandkids are going to be. Have you thought about that? I have. I think about it all the time. I'm like, we're not going to know. I mean, it's just kind of, there's a death of self. There's a death of saying, you know, us four and no more. There's a death that says, my family's not my own. It's the Lord's. And what does he want to do with it? But some of it's a death because you guys are empty nesters and you thought, whew, thank God. And God's like, yeah, well, I've got another plan for your family, and it involves this 14-year-old. Ready for you to start over with 10 years. That's death right there, isn't it? But let me tell you, come sit at my dinner table. You don't see death. You don't see death. It's life. It's life. But life comes through death. It's resurrection. And I promise you, if you'll die to yourself, if you'll die to what you think family is, God will give life upon life that you've never known and never experienced. And that's my hope for you. That's my prayer for you. I think you guys can do it. I'm excited about the hope for the lonely people in this room, in this community. I'm excited for the kids, 1,000 kids in this area that don't have a mom or dad, don't live with a mom or dad. Mission field's right outside the doors. The tool is your family. And God wants to include the lonely in it. asking you to join him.